9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
A UN report says China may have committed crimes against humanity in Xinjiang. Plus, oil prices fall for a third straight month, and flexible work spreads to the warehouse.
Manufacturers tell me that at the end of the day, a worker is a worker, right? And if someone wants to work there, they're going to find a position for them. Some companies said they're literally walking around the factory trying to find jobs that can be done by one person.
It's Thursday, September 1st. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The United Nations Human Rights Agency says China may have committed crimes against humanity in its treatment of ethnic Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities in Xinjiang. That is according to a long-awaited report that broadly supports critical findings by Western governments, human rights groups, and media detailing mass abuses in the region. The UN assessment emerged in the face of strong objections from the Chinese government, which reviewed a copy of the report ahead of publication. Beijing, in its response, included in an annex to the report, said the report was based on disinformation by anti-China forces. China also argues its policies in Xinjiang are aimed at diffusing risks of terrorism and alleviating poverty. Russian President Vladimir Putin is expected to visit Kaliningrad today, the Russian region along the Baltic Sea that is surrounded by NATO member states. Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich says the visit to the exclave is meant to send a message to the West.
Earlier this summer, tensions sparked between Moscow and other European capitals, particularly Lithuania, when Lithuania decided to block certain goods from entering Kaliningrad through its territory. Before the visit, the Kremlin said that he would be going to meet with the local governor and talk about this transit issue. What political analysts believe is by taking this trip, Putin is essentially sending a message to Europe saying Kaliningrad is here and don't mess with it.
A new Wall Street Journal poll has found that Democrats' midterm prospects have improved as the fall election campaign heats up, boosted by gains among independent voters, improved views of President Biden, and higher voting enthusiasm among abortion rights supporters. Asked which party they would support in their congressional district if the election were held today, respondents gave Democrats a slight edge over Republicans by a 3 percentage point margin. That compares to a 5-point advantage for Republicans in March. However, Republicans do have electoral fuel to tap into. Nearly 2/3 of registered voters say the economy is not good or poor, a larger share than in March, and close to 2/3 say the pain of higher costs makes them more likely to cast a ballot. Meanwhile, in other election news, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin's efforts to mount a political comeback were dealt a blow last night as she lost a special election for Alaska's only U.S. House seat to Democrat Mary Peltola. Peltola, a Yupik Eskimo, will be the first Native Alaskan to represent the state in Congress. Oil prices have posted their third straight monthly decline amid fears of a recession and waning demand. Benchmark U.S. oil futures ended Wednesday at $89.55 a barrel. That is down from more than $97 on Monday and a high of more than $120 in March, right after Russia invaded Ukraine. And entertainment giant Disney is exploring a membership program akin to Amazon Prime that could offer discounts or special perks to encourage customers to spend more on its streaming services, theme parks, resorts, and merchandise. That is according to people familiar with the discussions. Discussions at Disney are in the early stages, and it couldn't be learned how much the company would charge for membership or how long it would take to launch such a program. Music publishers and streaming services have agreed to raise the rates that songwriters get paid when their music is played on Spotify and other digital platforms. The deal between associations representing music publishers like Universal and Sony and platforms like Spotify, Apple, and others comes days before the parties were set to go to trial. Here with the details on the deal and the long road to get to this point is Journal reporter Chelsea Delaney. Hey, Chelsea, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so break down this deal for us. Who is getting what exactly?
So like you mentioned, this does really include the industry's biggest players. So we're talking Spotify, Apple, Amazon. So these are really big names in streaming services. So it is going to impact a lot of artists. And basically what this means is that they're going to get 15.35% of the revenues that those streaming services are making off of their music. And that is a bit of an increase from what they've been getting in the past couple of years. They've been receiving 15.1% for the past 4 years. So a slight increase, but it is not exactly what these music publishers were hoping for. They had asked for something more along the lines of 20%, but in the end, they took this lower deal.
I understand it's been a pretty long road to get to this agreement reached on Wednesday. Take us into how we got here.
Yeah, I think all of these negotiations between music publishers and the streaming services have been extremely contentious for the past several years. And there's definitely a bit of a fight about the amount of money or the lack of money that a lot of more independent artists are getting for their music on streaming services. So for a lot of artists, they've just been saying for years that they're making no money off of having huge audience bases on Spotify, on Apple Music. So there has been a big push from a lot of artists and music publishers to increase these payment levels. But at the same time, there have been other big changes because of streaming services. For one, we've seen a huge amount of interest in buying artist catalogs. So even though we haven't seen much of an increase in the amount that artists are getting through these streaming agreements, they are seeing more interest in their song catalogs and also seeing more interest in other sort of branding deals and social media, TikTok agreements, things like that.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Chelsea Delaney. Chelsea, thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Coming up, want to choose your own work hours? Well, thanks to a tight labor market, more on-site workers in industries like manufacturing and hospitality are getting that opportunity. We'll have that story after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Plus, save time by completing security questionnaires with Vanta AI. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ. That's VANTA.com/WSJ.
Flexible work is no longer just for remote workers logging into their jobs from home. That is thanks to a historically tight labor market that is changing how a range of companies do business and the arrangements they're willing to make with workers. Wall Street Journal economics reporter Austin Hufford has been tracking the shift in the labor force and joins us now with more from Chicago. Hey, Austin.
Hey.
So first off, what is going on here with the labor market that's leading businesses to be extra flexible with some of their workers? I know unemployment is low, but we'd also been seeing headlines about layoffs.
Companies are telling me that they're still trying to attract workers. And what this trend seems to be driven by the fact that when they want to hire someone, that person says, great, I want to work there, but I can only work on Mondays, or I can only work at night, so I can only work for specific hours. And so, yes, we are seeing some bigger companies that seem to be announcing some layoffs, but so far, unemployment rate is still at a 50-year low, and it remains extremely tight. And so right now, even though there's some evidence of slowing in the broader economy, the labor market remains extremely tight.
So tell us just how flexible some businesses are getting in their hunt for labor now.
Yeah. So for example, there's a GE appliance factory in Louisville, and one woman there is able to work only 2 nights a week. And that allows her to care for her kids during the day and yet still bring in enough income to kind of support her family. Other companies are using these things called the Shift app, which Gap uses, the clothing retailer, in its warehouses, where they literally have hundreds of workers who are just not even really employed, but they're just waiting in this app and they get notified, hey, there's a shift open tonight. Are you free? So it's almost like an Uber, but for warehouses, which is really fascinating.
Are these edge cases, or is this becoming pretty common?
It's becoming increasingly common. You know, we basically got some data from ZipRecruiter, which is a job board, and they say that more than 10% of job postings for in-person jobs mention having some amount of flexibility or flexible shifts. And so this definitely isn't like a tiny, tiny percentage. At the same time, people do tell me that at most factories, the majority still are regular workers doing regular shifts, but the share of flexible shifts is definitely growing. Amazon has this program called Anytime Shifts, which lets their workers choose shifts that they want or easily shift shifts if you need to. For example, I spoke to one worker, Anthony. He works typically Wednesday through Saturdays, but he had like a graduation party to attend to. And so he's able to shift his Saturday one to a Tuesday one. And so it just allows you to easily kind of mix and match your work hours. And in his case, he wants to ensure he's working full time, but it also could work for part-time workers.
How tricky is it for businesses to add this flexibility into how they do business? I imagine for a manufacturer, for instance, they've been operating an assembly line for kind of the same way for decades and decades.
Yeah, exactly. That was my biggest question is, how can a manufacturing plant do this? Some companies said they're literally walking around the factory trying to find jobs that can be done by one person. And so I spoke to an office furniture maker in Michigan, and they actually have found some roles that say, hey, you just need to make parts that the assembly line can use. And so the part makers can kind of be on an off shift. And as long as enough parts are made, then the assembly line can do it at a different time. And so that's how manufacturers are doing it. Manufacturers also tell me that at the end of the day, a worker is a worker, right? And so if someone wants to work there, they're going to find a position for them. GE Appliances told me that that was one of the reasons why they implemented their two-day program. Initially, it was only on, I think, Mondays and Fridays because they had higher absences on those days because people took off vacations or used sick days, whatever they wanted. And so they actually implemented a flexible program to try to kind of fill in for their full-time staffers.
Is this what these businesses want in an ideal world, or is it just sort of what they're forced to accept given the labor market right now?
Right now, they tell me that they're basically being forced to accept it. One factory owner told me that before the pandemic, it was kind of like, this is when we start. You could start at 6, you could start at 2, you could start at 10. Those are the shifts. And now it's literally like, okay, great, when can you be here? And it seems like the power dynamics have almost completely changed in certain parts of the economy.
And on the flip side, is this a trend of flexible work that's likely to last in terms of its appeal to workers? Even if they want it now, are they going to forever?
I think it really depends. A deep recession could end this trend. You know, that's one of the things. At the same time, there's a large chunk of people who are now single parents, single mothers, and a large chunk of people who are caring for elderly relatives because our country is getting older. And so because of that, there's going to be people who want to work, but they also need to balance their lives. And so they need to take care of a child or take care of an elderly parent. And that means that this demand for off hours or weird hours is likely to stay. And I think the last thing to keep in mind is that the labor market is a market, and that these workers who work for manufacturers also talk to their friends who might have remote jobs or have jobs that can be done partially at home. And so when they say, hey, I'm able to work my own hours at home, that's something that they're asking for their employers, even for in-person jobs. And the remote trend is not likely to change from what people tell me. And so that means that the demand for flexible in-person work is also likely to stay.
That was Wall Street Journal economics reporter Austin Huffer joining us from Chicago. Austin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, when did Americans start using Apple Pay? When Apple launched its payment service in 2014, using a credit card didn't seem like a problem requiring a solution. But 8 years later, Apple says 90% of retailers across the U.S. now take Apple Pay. Compare that to just 3% when the service launched. Wall Street Journal Science of Success columnist Ben Cohen says that patience isn't the most popular virtue in Silicon Valley, but for Apple, it paid off.
So some of it was waiting for stores to get there, and the rest of it was humans and human behavior had to change. So when Apple looked at the rest of the world, and Europe especially used contactless payments, they saw that they were several years ahead of the United States. And that gave them confidence that Americans weren't so different from the rest of the world. And then the last thing that happened that really accelerated the growth of Apple Pay and changed its trajectory was the pandemic. And there was a time when people did not want to hand their cards over to cashiers or stick their credit cards into terminals. And just being able to hold your phone near a reader was a much more preferable option.
And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.